They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. And joining us today on the Commons, we have Mike Schneider. Senator Mike Schneider has been a long-time advocate and friend of homeowners in Las Vegas, Nevada. Mike, thank you so much. I mean, you've watched things unfold for a long, long time in Nevada, and it seems like things are just coming to an end.
Yes. Uh-huh. It's been a federal probe into the investigation into construction defect, into the scamming of homeowner associations. And actually, there was a big story that broke this past weekend in the paper about that, and it became clear who finally turned the people in and got it going. And I know he doesn't want his name out there because it was an accident that his name came to life, because some documents were turned over to defense attorneys and his name was retracted. You know, just crossed out, of blacked out of all the testimony, but they missed one area. So the attorney, Scott Canepa, like the number one construction defect attorney here in Nevada. My understanding, Nancy Kwan used to work for him even. And
oh, really?
Yes. Uh-huh. And so he was bidding to get business to do some CD lawsuits from different associations, and he lost them. You know, they went to Nancy Kwan. And so I guess he finally got mad enough, and so he did an investigation on his own, developed some information, and turned it over to the feds and the local police.
I read the article, and it sounded a little bit like sour grapes, that he'd lost the case, and so he started looking into it. But
right.
I mean, that was in the early 2000s, but Mike, this has been going on way before then.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, for heaven's sakes, I knew it was going on.
Yeah, you did.
Uh-huh. And I had a good relationship with a couple of the management companies here in Las Vegas, and the owners of the companies, and well, I know one management company, they just barred the CD attorneys from even setting foot in their office, because it was the wine and dining and was so blatant and out of control that they just barred them from coming in. And then they one case was with this one very large company. They had a manager that had, oh, like seven homeowner associations this particular person managed, and I guess they weren't doing a good job, something like that, and they fired him, and the owner of the company took him over herself, and she discovered that all of them were in construction defect litigation with one particular attorney, and she was just furious about it, you know, because they didn't need to be there. And so this has been going on for years and years, but I'll tell you what, you know, our political process has been corrupted so bad with the amount of money that comes in to that process from from the trial bar. And, you know, it's just, it's very unfortunate. And in Nevada, you know, Las Vegas and Nevada in general is not the only state. I mean, it's California, Arizona, Texas, Florida. It's the same all over. And there's just so much money involved with the construction defect litigation, and we're talking billions of dollars. And so the attorneys are bringing in this money, and it's quite easy to make. It's, you know, let me say, it's almost like being in the drug business. It's it's big dollars, huge dollars, and extremely low risk. And so they want to keep that machine going, and they prime that pump by getting politically involved and trying to sway legislatures, and that's what they've done.
Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you sponsor legislation to put a cap on this, on the construction defect, some time ago?
Oh, absolutely.
And this was before all this happened, right?
Correct. My first bill on that actually was in 1997. So this has been going on a long, long time.
Oh, 1997 is when you introduced the first bill.
The first construction defect bill, yes. To try to cap this and slow it down. Now, I'm not saying there aren't construction defects. There are, you know. But what was going on some of the suits, you know, they were suing developers for faulty fireplaces and the chimneys and that falling away from the houses, not properly attached. And, you know, the subdivisions didn't even have fireplaces.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
And this actually, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. And they were just doing boilerplate stuff. They were, you know, it just got ugly. And there was just a mad rush. Now, like I said, I'm not saying there weren't construction defects, because there were on some. But they didn't amount to, first of all, they didn't amount to the tens of millions that was alleged. And a lot of this stuff, you know, could have been fixed easily, because each home's built by hand. It's not like it's built by a computerized machine. And so you do have to tune things up. You know, if you have a cabinet door that sticks, well, a lot of times you have to come in and adjust the cabinet door or a bathroom door. You know, those things happen. As you know, by now, they got to plane a little off or adjust it in some way. And those are easy fixes. But they're suing for all this stuff like this. One of the ones, you know, I just couldn't believe is one of the things named in the suit was sawdust in the power box, where you have your breakers and everything. At the bottom of the power box, there was a little sawdust in there. And of course,
and that went to court.
Yeah, and those are things they were awarded money on. And of course, you know, it just starts to build. So these cases build, and all of a sudden they go $10-20 million on awards, and they're throwing huge money in for this. And you know, a simple remedy to that is, yeah, they're, you know, technically, there shouldn't be a little bit of sawdust in the bottom of the power box, but the fix is you take just a laborer with a can of pressurized air and go in and spray it and spray it out.
And get rid of it.
Yeah, just like dusting it out, you know. And you can go around and do all that, and they can do a subdivision in a day or two, just a laborer going around each house. And not every house would have something like that either. You know, and it'd be checked. So, you know, that may be a careless little thing, but it's not worth, you know, an issue like that shouldn't be worth $100,000 in a claim. That's just, it's just like silly. And so we were getting sued out here for just a lot of silly stuff, and it was so competitive then for the attorneys to be able to sue. You know, they want to, they want to go in and win the favor of the boards and all that, so they can be awarded this construction defect lawsuit. And, you know, it's extremely competitive between the law firms that do this work. And, you know, until finally, like in Nancy Kwan's case, they were illegally electing board members into these associations. And the board members, you know, some of them be straw buyers that Nancy Kwan had put money up, and they buy units and then get these people elected to the board. And she actually used some retired cops. Everybody would think, you know, well, a retired cop, they have to be, you know, honest and legitimate. Well, they were on the payroll, you know. And, so all that was happening, and so she got turned in by one of her fellow
attorneys. Let's go back to the construction defects. Now, when a lot of these ended up, they were being settled outside of court, right?
Right. A lot of them ended up in court.
And so the attorneys were getting about half of it. And in the case of a real construction defect, the homeowners had to pony up additional money because there wasn't enough money to make the repairs.
Right, of the alleged repairs, correct. And so these things could go to court, and they would be in court 3 to 5 years by the time they'd file a lawsuit, and they process their way through the judicial system. It could take up to 5 years, of course. And if you really do have a defect shoe, that's no way to handle it.
Just
get it fixed. But a lot of these, the list of alleged defects, you know, would just be so lengthy. And then you get your money at the settlement time, and let's just say you get a big award, $20 million. Well, you get $20 million worth of defects, and the attorney takes half.
Yeah.
Well, now you get $10 million to do $20 million worth of defects.
Yeah. And so the homeowners...
for your listeners, these are large associations. These are not little, you know, like a little neighborhood. These are large associations that could have 1,000 homes in them, something like that. So it would just be awful. And then, of course, you know, the money is handed over to a board, and the attorney says, goodbye. You know, I've got my half. Here's yours. And he says goodbye and heads on down the road, and a board has this list of defects they have to repair, and they have absolutely no expertise in how to handle this. And, of course, that set up a lot of scams.
Oh.
And then that also helped Nancy Kwan come in, and she would come in with, she said, well, this particular contractor, Silver Lining, who was involved with her, helping with the scam, she said, they'll just do everything for you and all that. So she was, of course, making money on both sides of the deal. And, Silver Lining, I think, just pretended like they were fixing defects. And of course, a lot of them weren't even defects. So
they're blowing the dust out of the power box,
yeah,
right?
Right, right. Or they just go in and Mickey Mouse some repair and head on down the road. You know, the homeowners left in worse shape than before. So, you know, the scams just ran and ran because it got so, it was so easy, so fast. You know, they could get into these deals. And it became, now here, if the attorney files a lawsuit, you know, they get like 30% or whatever, third. If they go to litigation, now they get over 40% plus costs, so it always runs 50%, 52% in some cases. So the motivation of the attorney, of course, is always to go to litigation. Let's get this into court, because it just amounts to so much more money for them. And, here in Las Vegas, we had to set up a special construction defect court in our District 8 court. And there were like three judges assigned to this construction defect court, just because there were so many lawsuits.
Wow, there was a separate court for just construction defects?
Yes.
Mike, going back to 1997, when you first introduced your first bill, to try and control some of this. Were you aware of just how corrupt the whole thing was?
I had some knowledge that it was corrupt. I wasn't aware at that time, at that particular time, of how corrupt it was.
So what was your...
But I did, you know, that's when we set about, I had several bills at that time, a big HOA bill that I had in, to how HOAs should be regulated and how they should act. And so we had that in a bill, and then I had a separate bill on construction defect. And, you know, we did things like, you know, the color-coded double-stuffed ballot for electing officers. We did stuff like that, and it had to be opened at a meeting in front of all the homeowners. We did a lot of things. Now, of course, when you have laws, you have lax homeowners, like, well, I'm doing it okay. And then these darn attorneys, it's been written about, and of course we knew later in later years it was going on, where they knew who usually didn't vote, because you have a record on these HOAs of who votes and who doesn't vote. Okay, just like voting for president or whatever, a lot of people don't vote.
Okay,
so they would know who wouldn't vote, and then they would vote for those people, send ballots back in. They just hold their ballots out, send them back in, or they would take ballots, and they mailed ballots from California back into Las Vegas. From, you know, it's just the scams they were pulling. That's where they really got in trouble with the feds, because now that became interstate.
So that was the one thing that got the FBI involved. Is that correct? The fact that it was cross state lines?
Yeah. So they were scamming that way. It's amazing, you know. And one of the guys they used for that was a man who just shocked me. He'd been a big player in the Republican Party here in Nevada, and they used him. And so he got in, got to be one of those board members and on different associations, I guess, and was helping. You know, he knew how voting went and all that, so he was advising them on that, it's my understanding. And so he helped them with the scam, too.
So you started trying to clean this mess up in 1997.
Correct.
My understanding is Scott Canepa started doing his own investigations, what, in 2003?
Yeah, something like that.
And then he finally...
2008, I think. And that's when he turned it all over. It was about 2008, something like
that. Well, I think it says he turned it over in one of the articles. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to read. One of the articles said he turned it over. I think in 2007, and the Fed started investigating in 2008. So this has been... No, this is longer than that. They started investigating in 2007. But I think Canepa started in the early 2000s. And then turned it all over.
Well, I have an article in front of me, and it was in September 2008. The FBI agent, under sworn affidavit, they went to a federal judge for permission to conduct some searches, and that was in September of 2008. So,
is that when they walked in and just took all the boxes of records out of Nancy Kwan's and Benzer's offices?
Yeah, I believe that was like, end of 2008, 2009, something like that, Mm-hmm. So that's 4 or 5 years ago, that's about right.
So it's taken them this long, and in the interim, you've had 4 alleged suicides?
Yes, we have.
And you know,
it comes back to every one of the... of these people who committed suicide were all, you know, the thing that tied them all together was this probe right here. And they all had active participation in this whole scam with Nancy Kwan.
Well, one of the attorneys was found beaten up and naked in his association.
Right.
And broken kneecaps.
Yeah, they really worked him over. And then...
And then he hung himself
a few months later, and he was up in Northern California at his brother-in-law's ranch or farm up there in Northern California. He hung himself out in a barn or something like that.
Now, at the time, I think that there was an article where you were interviewed, and you were skeptical about the suicide portion of it. I think a lot of people were very skeptical, but the reports keep coming back that they were, in fact, suicides.
Right, right. That's what they rule. Uh-huh. There's something's too fishy.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you could have one, maybe two suicides, but, you know, where people know each other through a case. But once you get up to three and four, something's happening. That's all I'm saying. Something isn't kosher with this. And so with this Benzer of Silver Lining Construction and some of these guys, they're, you know, they talked in an article about their, and they've talked in several articles now about they had mob contacts and different stuff like that. And they vision themselves as Sopranos and all that stuff. One guy, I guess, did have connection to the Buffalo mob, and you know, it's just make a good TV show, I guess.
maybe there will be one in there, and who's gonna star in the Mike Schneider role?
That's right. Yeah. Hey, Matt Damon, why not, huh?
Matt Damon, all right, hey, go for it.
but it's just so sleazy. Everything is just so sleazy. But that's what happens when there's so much money involved.
Well, Nancy Kwan, there was the story of her boyfriend trying to burn her up in her house. And then she committed suicide in a bathtub. So, yeah. I mean, there seems... It's not just a suicide, but there seems to be a history.
Yeah, and her boyfriend was a... He is a cop.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So I think he must have, I'm only speculating, I have no evidence or anything, but, you know, he's an ex-cop. There were ex-cops involved as board members working for Nancy Kwan on this. And the first suicide was the guy who was an ex-cop. And, I mean, he killed himself right away. He was obviously very scared. And so...
Was that a real suicide, or was there any funny business attached to that one as well?
You know, I don't know. When you stick a... When you go out on a railroad track and stick a shotgun underneath your head, who knows what happened? You know?
That kind of gave us the first clue that maybe this was going to be really big?
Yeah, you know? Uh-huh. It did me, and I thought, oh boy, why would a guy do that? Well, first of all, a cop probably didn't want to go to prison. That's one thing, but, you know, I guess you can let your mind run wild here, and you got four suicides, and maybe the people thought, well, if I'm gone, my story ends, and my family's protected. You know, why else would you commit suicide? It's maybe to protect your family. I mean, that's a theory you can work on there. Because there's a lot of really bad people, real crooks, that don't commit suicide, that have stolen more money, you know?
That's
and
true.
They don't commit suicide. And so these people were scared for some reason, I guess. I mean, that's a theory you can put in, you know, you can develop your theories of why were these people killing themselves. Nancy Kwan tried, you know, a couple times before she was able to do it, and, you know, well, she protected her children, you know. maybe. That's a theory. I don't know. That's just kind of my theory, but, you know, you may have another one.
Well, I don't know, but we're Radio Fairfax, and you're on the Commons, and we're talking to Senator Mike Schneider, and we're talking about a massive FBI investigation, a multi-year FBI investigation into all kinds of corruption in HOAs in Las Vegas, where some of the attorneys, four people were dead now, and there are, 26 people who've been indicted?
Yeah, at least that, uh-huh.
And we're still, and the FBI has turned over 3.1 million pages
mm-hmm.
of data.
Right, right.
And it's, and you, when I talked to you the other day, you thought it would be another year before it all ended, right?
Well, I think so. You know, the trial, it said in the paper, the trial is scheduled for March 3rd to start. So, yeah, you could figure, you know, about a year. And you have a trial, and then you're going to have sentencing. You have to wait for the sentencing and all that. So, yeah, next summer sometime. Trial goes in early spring, and then by the summer, they hopefully will have it wound up. But, you know, one thing on this issue is, for your listeners, this, you know, our U.S. Attorney's Office, you know, there were leaks going out of there, supposedly. And so they had to back away from our U.S. Attorney's Office here in Nevada because the leaks going out to Nancy Kwan on the investigation. And then the Justice Department's fraud section out of Washington, D.C. got involved.
So even within the investigation, there was all kinds of fraud and stuff going on?
Yeah, it may be. And, you know, so our U.S. attorney, Daniel Bogdan, he's claiming, well, you know, no charges have been filed against our guys, so, but who knows. But there were some leaks, and that's why the U.S. Justice Department's fraud section out of D.C. came in and took over everything.
So, when...
Again, it gets back to why would there be leaks, and I think there's just a lot of money floating around.
Wow. Uh-huh. So we may never actually get to the bottom of what happened, will we?
Yeah, we may not. We may not.
It's interesting. That's really interesting. And again, you know, you said your imagination runs wild, and my imagination's really running wild right now. But I know that with every one of the alleged suicides, after a very brief investigation, they came back and said there was no evidence of foul play.
Right.
And therefore, that these were, in fact, suicides. Now I'm starting to wonder whether or not they aren't. I mean, a lot of people don't believe that they were suicides, but I'm wondering if there isn't a cover-up going on here.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I suppose if I walked up into a scene where there's a body, I couldn't tell if it was suicide or murder, you know. You got to really be an expert. I don't know, and you know, my theory is, and it's just a theory, and my theory is as good as your theory, right?
So, absolutely.
You know, I think that I think they were probably really suicides, but they committed suicide to protect their families. That's what I think.
If it was a suicide, Mike, if you were contemplating committing suicide, would you beat yourself up, break your kneecaps, and wander around stark naked in your subdivision?
Yeah, you know, and then you get back to my theory. You know, the way this guy was pummeled so bad and everything, I think they were sending a message. That's my, that again comes into my theory, that they, who's ever doing the threatening out there sent a big message to everyone. And
but you don't, in Nancy Kwan's case, you don't drug yourself into oblivion and then set the house on fire.
Well, maybe you do.
There are just so many things that don't really add up.
Right. And then her boyfriend, the cop, they caught him. He was buying some drug for her, supposedly.
Yes.
When I read the paper, for her to commit suicide with, the drug is not traceable so well. And he was buying it, and he actually wound up buying it from an undercover cop. So they caught him doing that, and, you know, I don't know.
There was a time, Mike, when just about all the homeowners who were having problems in Las Vegas or probably Nevada would contact you.
Right.
Looking for help. Are you still hearing from people, and are you still getting the same kinds of problems that you were getting, or has it totally shifted into what's going on now?
Well, it's shifted a bit, and some of it is, you know, I'll tell you what, some of it's cleaned itself up, okay? You know, we have some pretty good laws on the books now, and it helps people, you know, direct their associations. We have a better ombudsman now. We had some ombudsmen that were just ridiculous. And we have a better one now. People are taking more interest in these things. So I think a lot of it has cleaned itself up. You know, our laws are actually pretty darn good. And then, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, well, Mike Schneider wrote all these laws and cleaned everything up. Well, I'm not naive enough to think that that's all that. But, you know, the laws are there. And now with the feds in snooping around, I think everybody's kind of watching their P's and Q's.
Next question is, once the feds move out, and once whatever they're going to put on the table is on the table, and
right,
nobody's watching, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think you'll...
Go back?
I think slowly you'll have some issues arise. But it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see, since you read the article over the weekend also.
Yeah.
And about this Scott Canepa. And what happens here now. And it even said in the article, you know, he wouldn't return phone calls, and they're sure he didn't, you know. I've talked to people around the community who said, oh, my God, he's probably just in shock that his name got released, that he was behind turning some of this in. So, you know.
Was he investigated as well, or wasn't he?
I don't think he was, because he was working with them, you know.
But if he's one of the top construction defect attorneys.
Yeah. I would think that, you know, I think you go over all their books, all the guys that, you know, there's about four or five of these firms that do, you know, all the business. And I think you just go look at all of them. That's what I think. But, boy, that's a big job.
3.1 million pieces of paper, yeah.
Yeah.
How's that for some little light night reading, right?
Right. Right.
Wow. Have you seen any of the documentation? I mean, I know that a lot of it's been under lock and key, but some of the stuff is going to start being made public, right?
Right. Right. No, I haven't seen anything in particular that, you know, piques my interest. And, you know, I haven't kept in contact with the FBI. I mean, they called and wanted to meet with me years ago, and it's before the 2000, it was in 2009, January 2009. And they just wanted to thank me for some of the laws that I wrote. And And they wanted to thank me for the, in particular, the preamble to our law out here in Nevada is NRS, Nevada Revised Statutes 116. And they thanked me for the preamble, because in the preamble we said these are our governments. These homeowner associations are governments. And they are. I mean, that's what we believe in the legislature, and they have the power to tax and fine, and, you know, they can take your property and all that stuff. So they are quasi-governments. They are governments. And so that was the key thing that allowed the FBI to get involved. And it's because the FBI can't get involved in, like, local issues or things like this, but the FBI's number one charge for the whole nation is political corruption. So once they started reading our laws and they read that preamble and they said the state of Nevada looks at these as governments, so if it's a government, these people are then involved in political corruption if they're defrauding these HOAs and that. And that was the door that let them come in.
So if it hadn't been for that, they would not have conducted this investigation?
Correct. They couldn't have come in. It wouldn't have been in their jurisdiction.
We're talking to Senator Mikey from Nevada. And Senator Mike Schneider has been key in writing legislation to protect homeowners. He has long been affectionately known as Senator Mikey. And we're talking about some of the legislation he put in place. And as far as I know, Mike, Nevada is probably the only state that calls HOAs governments.
Right.
So I'm getting a lot of calls and emails and all kinds of things from all over the country saying, if they can do this in Nevada, why can't they?
I like how you're saying that, Shu. Nevada. You're really getting better at it.
I am?
Yeah, it's not Nevada. Nevada.
Yeah. Nevada.
There you go.
All right. I'm getting a lesson in American English. If they can do it in Nevada, why can't they do it in Idaho or Virginia or Pennsylvania or Arizona or California or Iowa? And
right.
The key is because you've called them governments.
Right, and we actually put it in statute. And so I think maybe some other states, some of the state leaders, I'm going to speculate now. I would think that this whole thing about these being governments, does the state legislature give up some of its power or whatever by calling these other governments? And I would say no. These are governments. And in Nevada, we do not have home rule in Nevada, meaning that all the counties and cities have to come to the legislature for approval to, raise taxes. They just can't raise taxes on their own. They need approval from the state.
Dillon state rule, right?
Right. And so the state government in Nevada is pretty powerful like that. So, but if you... I think if other legislators would just look at this, this is, and a lot of people, especially on the Republican side of the aisle, they say they believe in this states' rights and all this thing, and they say, you know, government closest to the people is best. Well, these homeowner associations, that is government, that's kitchen table government right there.
Can't get any closer, can you?
No. And every time they change their bylaws or change a rule, boy, it can affect you just immensely. And we're, you know, of course, over the last two decades, we've seen where people lose their homes because of rules that are changed, and where they enforce, they don't uniformly enforce the rules and the CCNRs. What they'll do is they'll change a rule just to get after one person. So it's like selective enforcement and all that. So this is government that can really go bad, and nobody watches it. So I firmly believe that the states should really take a close look at what they're doing and with these governments. You wouldn't let a city in Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, they wouldn't let a city get out of control and run amok, like I'm sure some homeowner associations in Virginia are doing.
Oh, yes.
So, to stick your head in the sand and say, well, these aren't governments, you're just being foolish. And you really have to start making them go by the same laws as cities and counties have to go by. You know, your open meeting laws and all that stuff. I mean, we've actually passed a lot of that here in Nevada about the open meeting, and you have to post your meeting agenda just like a city, and you post it, and you cannot bring up and act on other issues if it isn't posted. So, we've done a lot to try to curb some of the abuses.
What about, all right, we have similar laws in Virginia, and I've been to some of the meetings, and board members are not aware of it. There's nobody enforcing anything. They have this, getting all kinds of static going through the line here. We have board members who just do what they want to do because they don't understand the laws. They misunderstood it. They misunderstand everything, or they intentionally try to mislead the homeowners. But there's no adult supervision. There's no one coming in, no Mikey Schneider coming in and saying, okay, guys, you're doing this wrong.
Right. I know exactly what you're saying. And that's why, here we have the ombudsman, and we've been through some things. And I'll tell you what, I think I've told you this before, the ombudsman's department is in the wrong area, and it should be under the attorney general. And our attorney general agrees with that. And then that gives it a lot more horsepower.
Who's your ombudsman right now? Do you still have the panel?
Well, we have a panel, yeah, but we have an ombudsman, a lady, I just dropped her name now. So, anyhow, and she's an attorney. She does a pretty good job, I think. She's trying hard. But operating in the real estate division, she really can't do everything she needs to do. If she were operating in the judicial branch, in under the attorney general, she could do a lot more. And also, it's a lot more horsepower, and you can't stall and bluff the attorney general's office like you can the real estate division. That's what's happened in the past. Some of these construction defect attorneys, they've threatened, stalled, bluffed everything, the ombudsman's office and the real estate division, and gotten away with all kinds of shenanigans. You can't do that with the attorney general. Attorney general is they have all the power. They have the big stick. They have the power of the courts, and they have basically an unlimited budget. So there's no attorney that's going to take on the attorney general, for a homeowner association. They're going to back down because, man.
What? Mike, what are the odds of getting the ombudsman moved into the Attorney General's office? Is there a possibility of that happening?
Yeah, there is. Actually, it has to be done. You know, let's get back to hard-nosed politics here. It has to get done when both parties control the governor's office and the attorney general's office. And it doesn't matter which party, Democrat or Republican, but both parties have to be. And we've had a split. We've had Republican governors and Democrat attorney generals here for a while now, so we haven't been able to move it. It's one of those things, they don't want somebody to get more power and all, you know, all that silly stuff.
You're being termed out, right?
Right. I am termed out. I'm done.
You're done? You're out of the legislature? You're no longer senator?
Right.
What now,
yes,
Mike?
I'm senator. You call me senator till I die, Shu, but...
I will always call you Senator Mikey because you've always been a great friend.
Yeah. But, no, I've termed out.
You have termed out. So what are you doing now?
Building apartments for low-income seniors. That's what I was doing anyhow.
So you're in construction?
Well, I'm in development, yeah.
You're in development.
We hire a contractor to do it.
What happens now? Has anybody picked up where you left off in terms of coming up with legislation to protect the homeowners?
Well, there's been a couple people that have kind of worked on it a little bit. I am going to be talking with the gentleman who took my spot in the Senate, and he had a great session. He's a bright individual, and he happens to be an attorney. So I'm going to be talking with him over the interim here and seeing if we can't somehow take a shot at moving some of this forward, especially moving the ombudsman into the attorney general's office.
How much power does the ombudsman have? What is the ombudsman allowed to do? Because there's one in Virginia who's not allowed to do anything, and CAI saw to it that the way this whole thing was written, I mean, she basically is a placebo, so that if you have any homeowners who complain, then they're told, well, go see the ombudsman. The ombudsman will tell you, and she's an attorney, I'm only allowed to enforce or explain the laws to you. So now the homeowners are paying to have somebody sit there and say, well, yes, that means you really can record the meeting if you live in an HOA and you go to the meeting. But there's no, hey, association, that's, you know, this homeowner has that right. There's none of that. It's the only thing she's allowed to do is say, yes, in fact, that's what the law is, period.
Yeah, that's kind of the predicament our ombudsman's in also. However, our ombudsman can subpoena records, things like that. If you don't turn, you know, if a homeowner requests to see the books, let's say, the association, and the board won't turn the financial records over to them, then the ombudsman can subpoena those records. They can do things like that, okay? But, you know, I talked to our attorney general here and explained to her about these HOAs, and she has a deputy AG, her chief deputy AG, is really a knowledgeable guy, knowledgeable on these HOAs, and he agreed that you know, it needs to be in the Attorney General's office, because, you know, most of these problems with HOAs start over violation of the CC&Rs or some sort of inappropriate CC&Rs. Well, those are all legal matters. And so they come in, and everything to do with those CC&Rs and everything, that's all legal. And so I think that inside the Attorney General's office, I told our Attorney General this, you could hire two or three young attorneys out of college and educate them in HOA issues, and they can build their 30-year career doing that and be experts, and you could really have a well-run and efficient operation where they would be knowledgeable on all this, and they'd, of course, have the horsepower of the Attorney General's office where they could actually go after and indict people, which is scares a lot of people into being honest citizens, you know. but they, you know, and then the Ombudsman's office would have some real horsepower. And why I wasn't able to place it in there originally, that's where I had it. And the Attorney General at the time in 97 was a lady, Frankie Sue Del Papa, very, very well-liked in Nevada. And so the Republicans in controlled our Senate at the time, and they said no. They said, you can have the Ombudsman, we'll pass all this because it's good, and they understood. They said it's good, we didn't, but you can't put it in the Ombudsman's office into the Attorney General's office, because they thought Frankie Sue was going to run for governor or U.S. Senate, and they didn't want to give her a bigger platform. And so that's the problem. And I said, okay. They just told me, find someplace else to put it. And so I just thought, well, it's kind of real estate, so we'll put it in the real estate division. A lot more real estate than welfare, right? So that was it. But it should go, and I would tell every state, put it in the Attorney General's office. That's the place to put it. And really develop the office. You know, it's kind of like consumer protection is in the Attorney General's office, and that's where it should be for consumer fraud and all that stuff. That's where it should be, and this is, you know, this is like consumer fraud, you know, these HOAs, and so anyhow, that's get off my bandwagon on it, but that's what I would tell Virginia. I would tell every state that you gotta put that where the big horsepower is.
How much do you, I'm going to go back to the FBI investigations now. You said earlier that with the Ombudsman, you know, people start behaving themselves a little bit when they're afraid that they're going to get hauled in front of the, you know, the Ombudsman gets involved and starts subpoenaing records and things, and they start behaving themselves. You've got an even bigger lake that's going on in this FBI investigation with the construction defects. Do you think that this is going to clean things up, or is it going to be, it's going to clean it up for a little bit and then back to business as usual?
Well, I think, I think it cleans it up while they're here, and then you'll have some residual effect. It's like driving past a big auto accident on the freeway. Everybody slows down, and then they go slow after they pass the accident. They go slow for the next 5 or 10 miles.
They really start speeding.
And then they start speeding back up again. And yeah, I think that's just human nature. So I will have some residual effect here where it'll be pretty good for the next X number of months or years after the FBI pulls out, but I think that's just the human nature of it, you know. And that's why, again, that's why I think it's so important. I think everybody realizes that the FBI, again, the FBI has all the time and all the money in the world. You can't escape them once they're after you. And if you've done something wrong, they're going to get you, you know, because they just keep plodding along until.
Well, they've been plodding along for a number of years here, so
right.
I'm really curious to see what comes out of all of this. It's been interesting, but Mike, would you believe we're out of time?
Well, it's been fun, Shu.
It's been
fun. I always enjoy talking to you.
Well, I hope you'll come back, even though you're not in the Senate. I still hope that, I mean, you're still knowledgeable, And you have a great history in Nevada, so I'd like to have you back again.
You bet.
And
no problem, Jill. I'll still be involved in politics somehow, believe me.
Oh, once in your blood, always in your blood, right,
that's
Mike?
That's right.
Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.